VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken arrived in Kyiv on Tuesday in an unannounced diplomatic mission to reassure Ukraine that it has American support as it struggles to defend itself against the increasingly intense Russian attacks. The visit comes less than a month after Congress approved the long-delayed massive assistance package that sets aside $60 billion in aid for Ukraine, much of which will go toward replenishing badly depleted artillery and air defense systems. U.S. military assistance from a multi-billion dollar aid bill passed by Congress last month is already on the ground in Ukraine, according to White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
I don't want to suggest that all $1 billion worth of equipment is on the battlefield, but what you will see is a steady flow week by week. It's not like we've got to wait well out into the future before stuff starts getting delivered.
As part of the $95 billion aid bills, Congress authorized nearly $61 billion worth of various forms of aid to Ukraine, and the White House pledged to get the weapons into Ukraine swiftly. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his cabinet ministers were heckled on Monday at a Memorial Day ceremony held in honor of fallen soldiers and Israeli civilian victims. Person called Netanyahu garbage as he ended his speech addressing bereaved families in Jerusalem. The man whose voice was heard shouting as Netanyahu stepped down to the audience seats was asked by members of the public to keep quiet, but replied, "There's nothing to respect. He killed my children." This is VOA News. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports that the U.S. worries efforts undertaken on AI by China could undermine national security.
China's official news agency, citing the foreign ministry, says the two sides would take up issues including the technological risks of AI and global governance. The National Security Council at the White House comments the U.S. team is being led by presidential advisor and senior director for technology and national security, Tarun Chhabra, and the State Department's acting special envoy for critical and emerging technologies, Seth Center.
That is AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reporting. A secret recording of Michael Cohen making of Donald Trump playing at his hush money trial. AP correspondent Julie Walker tells us more.
September 2016, Trump's then lawyer Michael Cohen set up a deal with his boss to buy Playboy model Karen McDougal's story about an affair which he denies, so it would not be public. Cohen secretly taped Trump.
I'm going to do that right away. I've actually come up and I've spoken to Alan Weisselberg about how to set the whole thing up with funding. Yes.
Weisselberg, then CFO of Trump's company. Trump asking about paying the deal in cash.
When it comes time for the financing, which will be...
What financing?
We'll have to pay you. So.
I'll pay the cash.
No. I got...
The jury heard the tape Monday. Trump denies charges he falsified business records to cover hush money payments. At court in Manhattan, I'm Julie Walker.
Plans have been unveiled for a permanent memorial honoring the 10 black victims of a racist mass shooting at a Buffalo, New York supermarket. The design released Monday features interconnected stone pillars and arches connected to a windowed building where exhibitions and events will be held. The announcement comes the day before the second anniversary of the May 14, 2022 attack at Tops grocery store located in a predominantly black Buffalo neighborhood. New York State has committed a total of $5 million to the $15 million project. On Tuesday, Tops will dedicate another memorial near the store and hold a moment of silence. Millions of Indians across 96 constituencies began casting their ballots Monday as the country's gigantic six-week-long election had just passed its halfway mark. Prime Minister Narendra Modi is seeking a third straight term with an eye on winning a supermajority in Parliament. Polling in the fourth round of multi-phase national elections across nine states and one union territory will be pivotal for Modi's Hindu Nationalist Party. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Ukrainians Ukrainians are evacuated as Russia pummels Kharkiv.
We need to lead her straight to the bus. Hold on, where is the bus? Tell me which bus can I put her on?
Tensions rise between India and Pakistan as election rhetoric amps up.
As soon as I came to power, I said enough is enough. Today, Pakistan is complaining to the world and crying, save us, save us.
And a new version of ChatGPT can chat for real and in real time.
I'd like you to be super sarcastic. Everything you say from now on is just going to be dripping in sarcasm. How does that sound?
Oh, that sounds just amazing. Being sarcastic all the time isn't exhausting or anything. I'm so excited for this.
Today is Tuesday, May 14th. And this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Russia pressed its ground assault into the north of Ukraine's Kharkiv region on Monday, attacking new areas with small groups to try to widen the front and stretch Ukrainian forces. Ukrainian officials and commanders say Russian troops are locked in intense battles with Ukrainian soldiers and are putting pressure on an overstretched Ukrainian force. AP correspondent Charles Deledesma says police are rushing in to evacuate as many people as they can.
Ukrainian National Police are evacuating hundreds of civilians from Kharkiv region's border areas amid Russian airstrikes and nearby shooting. A police officer walks a woman to vehicles holding her hand. She doesn't see, he says. We need to lead her straight to the bus. Hold on, where is the bus? Tell me which bus can I put her on? Reporters lie on the ground amid nearby explosions. The police video shows the camera shaking as the village evacuation proceeds. A police officer next to a gate shouts, "Faster, grandmother, faster!" Elsewhere, a unit runs toward an old building, hammering on its doors and walls. People are evidently running for their lives as the Russian units advance. I'm Charles Deledesma.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has arrived in Ukraine. The two-day visit was kept under wraps until he pulled in by train at dawn on Tuesday. It's his fourth Kyiv visit since the start of Russia's full-scale invasion in early 2022. Officials say he'll deliver a strong message of reassurance as the country struggles to hold back the Russian incursion near Kharkiv. Ukraine is not the only border area where Russia is pushing forward. Analysts say Russia is adopting a so-called hybrid approach to growing its strategic influence in the Arctic. For the inhabitants of one remote Norwegian community, the announcement of a new boat bringing tourists from Russia means more than just a few extra visitors. Henry Wilkins reports from Svalbard, Norway.
Norwegian companies dominate the tourism industry here in Svalbard, a remote Norwegian archipelago approximately 600 kilometers north of the mainland. But Russia has also got its eyes set on the island's tourism industry. Because of Svalbard's unusual legal framework, countries other than Norway that are signatories to the century-old Svalbard Treaty are allowed to carry out economic activity here. Russia announced in April it would be sending its own boat carrying tourists to the island.
I don't think it will affect us.
Norway's presence in Svalbard means it could potentially deny Russia's northern fleet access to the Atlantic in the event of a conflict. For that reason, analysts say, Russia maintains a presence on the island, which it's entitled to, primarily in the form of Barentsburg, a town of some 400 mostly Russian and Ukrainian people. Most military activity on Svalbard is banned under the treaty, but analysts say Russia is adopting a so-called hybrid approach to growing its influence here. That means gradually developing legitimate activities like research, industry, and tourism, and increasing its maritime presence, ultimately for strategic aims. One academic says some have noticed a recent ramping up of Russia's rhetoric around Svalbard too. Arild Moe, senior research fellow at the Fridtjof Nansen Institute.
Well, first of all, there have been these declarations, an official Russian declaration, which have been very critical on Norway, alleging that Norway is militarizing the islands, running NATO's errand, and so on. Quite strong wording, which is, of course, interpreted by people in it as a very hostile.
John Fidje Hoffman, an assistant to the governor of Svalbard, a member of Norway's police security service, told VOA there are frequent minor infringements of regulations by Russians on the island, including misuse of helicopters, which should only be used to assist mining, and
they're driving around with the vehicles in Barentsburg with Russian number plates instead of the Norwegian official number plates that they are supposed to have.
In May of 2023, inhabitants of Barentsburg organized a Russian Victory Day procession, which many locals here say had militaristic overtones. This year, Svalbard's governor said celebrations were significantly more subdued after last year's caught global media attention. Hoffman says,
whether this is because they've figured that out themselves or if somebody has from Moscow said that it's better to have a more modest celebration, we don't know.
The Russian special consul in Barentsburg, who, according to a 2023 investigation by the Norwegian broadcaster NRK, is an operative for Russian military intelligence, declined a request for interview. With Russia working to grow its influence across the Arctic and its bases in the region now outnumbering NATO's 3-1, its proposed tourist boat to Svalbard is likely just the tip of the iceberg. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Longyearbyen, Norway.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Rumble has sued Google and parent company Alphabet, arguing it's owed more than $1 billion in damages. The news site, Axios, reported the suit involves claims of lost ad revenue and hampering Rumble's ability to compete as an ad tech competitor. 12 people were killed and at least 60 injured after a billboard collapsed during a fierce storm in India's financial capital, Mumbai. Officials said Monday an excavator was digging through the wreckage as rescuers raced to find any survivors after the signage collapsed at a gas station in the city's east, trapping dozens of people underneath. Tunisian police stormed the Bar Association headquarters for the second time in 2 days and arrested a lawyer. Witnesses said on Monday the police arrested the lawyer, Mahdi Zagruba, as other lawyers screamed in the background. Zagruba is a prominent lawyer known for his opposition to President Kais Saied. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 presidential election, as Russia pushed into northern Ukraine this week, the U.S. presidential race between Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump remained focused on another foreign policy crisis, the war in Gaza. As VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, keeping American attention on Ukraine could be difficult.
The northern Ukrainian border town of Volchansk. Evacuating just hours ahead of when Russia claimed it captured the town. Ukraine fighting back with the more than $50 billion assistance from the United States approved last month by President Joe Biden. He argued for months that aid to Ukraine is a centerpiece of U.S. national security policy.
The United States walks away, it will put Ukraine at risk. Europe is at risk. The free world will be at risk, emboldening others to do what they wish to do us harm. My message to President Putin, who I've known for a long time, is simple. We will not walk away.
But analysts say presidential elections rarely turn on foreign policy issues. James Thurber is a professor at American University.
The issue of Ukraine barely registers in the polls, and the issue of foreign policy, less than 5% of the people think that's an important issue, foreign policy generally, meaning the relationship that we have with China, Communist Party of China, but also pushing back on Putin and what's happening in Gaza.
Presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has argued the U.S. already sends too much aid. Earlier this year, the former president suggested he would not adhere to the Mutual Self-Defense Pact if Russia invaded a NATO country.
I would not protect you. In fact, I would encourage them to do whatever the hell they want.
That message resonates with voters concerned about American involvement overseas. Dr. Barbara Perry of the Miller Center at the University of Virginia.
The 20 years of the war on terror and the so-called endless wars probably converted more Americans to isolationism and America first. And that's why Donald Trump was successful in 2016 and why he is successful at having garnered all but officially the nomination of the Republican Party for 2024.
The push against funding Ukraine's defense against Russia put some Republicans in a difficult position this election year. But after months of delay, House Speaker Mike Johnson, a Trump supporter, brought the aid up for a successful vote.
I would rather send bullets to Ukraine than American boys.
With protests against the war in Gaza taking place on college campuses across the U.S., analysts say there is a bigger election season discussion about how U.S. aid is spent abroad.
And I do know a number of young voters in this country who think carefully about their student loan debts, as an example. You know, why are we spending these billions and billions of dollars sending armaments abroad to Ukraine and sending armaments to Israel? Why aren't we using those monies domestically for other issues that need caring for in this country?
The aid to Ukraine approved by Congress in April is likely to be the last disbursement this year before the November presidential election. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
Polls closed in India for the fourth phase of its massive general elections on Monday. Voters turned out to cast their ballots across several regions. Election officials closed polling stations around 11:30 UTC in some parts of the country, sealing electronic voting machines inside containers with red wax before dispatching them for counting. Now, as India goes to the polls, arch-rival Pakistan is watching closely. Islamabad is irked that Indian politicians have taken a tough stance on Pakistan to woo voters. VOA Pakistan Bureau Chief Sahara Zaman explores how campaign rhetoric might impact the already rocky ties between the neighbors.
Machines at Serena Textile Industries near Pakistan's eastern city Lahore produce fabrics for some of the country's biggest brands and businesses across the globe. But Pakistan's eastern neighbor India, one of the world's largest markets, is off limits.
We will get cheaper raw materials, which we were getting before the trade embargo. Finer fabrics, our lawns and our cambrics and cottons, are very well liked in India.
Islamabad suspended trade with India in August 2019 after New Delhi unilaterally ended the autonomous status of the disputed Jammu and Kashmir territory. Pakistani businesses want Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif's new government to resume trade ties in a bid to ease economic pain. But as India goes to the polls, Prime Minister Narendra Modi is presenting himself as tough compared to the main opposition party Congress in cracking down on Pakistan's alleged cross-border terror activities.
As soon as I came to power, I said enough is enough. Today, Pakistan is complaining to the world and crying, save us, save us.
Partitioned in 1947, the two nuclear-armed nations have fought multiple wars and routinely accuse each other of cross-border terrorism. Pakistani experts say Indian politicians can't afford to look soft on Pakistan.
Congress, they are labeling Modi as the close friend of Mr. Sharif in Pakistan. So this is a pattern. They are addressing to extremist voters, especially the BJPs, and they are point scoring that we would be hard and we would be harsh on Pakistan.
BJP is the Modi-led Bharatiya Janata Party. Tensions reached a high point in 2019 when India and Pakistan engaged in an air skirmish for the first time in decades. Still, since 2021, both sides have largely maintained one of their longest ceasefires along the de facto border in Kashmir. As Modi eyes a historic third term in office, some in Pakistan think he may choose the path of peace despite sounding like a hawk.
So if he is to go down in history, he has to leave some legacy. So I see that a chance for Modi to make his name in terms of making peace with Pakistan.
Islamabad recently urged Indian politicians to stop dragging Pakistan into what the Foreign Office called India's populist public discourse. Experts say that while Pakistan bashing may boost some Indian voters, once elections are over, governments on both sides put campaign rhetoric behind and work quietly to resolve issues. Zaman's profits would soar if he could trade with India. But he's not hopeful of a breakthrough if Modi, a Hindu nationalist, returns.
From the past 10 years that he's been in power, it does not give rise to a lot of optimism being a Muslim and a Pakistani.
Sara Zaman, VOA News, Islamabad.
International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. A former economy minister in Kazakhstan was sentenced to 24 years in prison on Monday for murdering his wife, following a widely watched trial that some saw as a litmus test of the president's promise to strengthen women's rights. Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino has more.
Kazakhstan's former economy minister has been sentenced to 24 years in prison for murdering his wife. The widely watched trial, broadcast live over 7 weeks, was seen by some as a litmus test for the president's promise to strengthen women's rights. 44-year-old Kwandyk Bishambayev was found guilty of torture and murder by the court. CCTV footage captured Bishambayev arguing with his 31-year-old wife, Saltanat Nukanova, on the night she died. During the trial, separate footage showed Bishambayev punching and kicking Nukanova before dragging her by her hair into a room where she later died. Videos found on his phone showed him insulting and humiliating a visibly bruised and bloodied Nukanova over the final hours before she lost consciousness. Bishambayev admitted to beating his wife, but said some of her injuries were self-inflicted. He denied torturing or planning to murder her. Nukanova's brother spoke after the verdict.
This prison term was one of the options we expected. Generally, we stop here. This term is enough. In 24 years, he will be 68. It's basically a life sentence.
The trial has been widely regarded as an attempt by authorities to send a message that members of the elite are no longer above the law. The case has helped rally public support behind a law criminalizing domestic violence, which Parliament passed last month. Government data shows that 1 in 6 women in Kazakhstan has experienced violence by a male partner.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino. U.S. President Joe Biden delivered remarks on Monday at a White House reception commemorating Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
There is no singular Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander identity and diversity in those cultures, the breadth of achievement, and shape the strength and fabric of this country. But it's not all the same. The fastest growing demographic in the United States, you represent how we are as a nation of immigrants, nation of dreamers, nation of freedom.
Biden and Vice President Harris spoke to a gathering of supporters in the Rose Garden, emphasizing the administration's policy achievements in contrast to the rhetoric and proposed agendas of the previous administration. France won a record $16 billion in foreign investment pledges on Monday, allowing President Emmanuel Macron to bask in the limelight with global CEOs and forget about strained public finances and weak polls for a while.
We have good results for France. We are, I think, now back in the race, very competitive in energy, quantum, AI, and a lot of fields in healthcare, obviously a lot of sectors, batteries in which you invest.
Macron hosted business leaders for the annual Choose France summit at Versailles Palace. And finally...
Hey, ChatGPT. I'm Mark. How are you?
Oh, Mark. I'm doing great.
That's OpenAI showing off the latest version of ChatGPT, a conversation that happened in real time on stage at the demonstration.
So I'm on stage right now. I'm doing a live demo. And frankly, I'm feeling a little bit nervous. Can you help me calm my nerves a little bit?
Oh, you're doing a live demo right now? That's awesome. Just take a deep breath and remember, you're the expert.
The speed of the response has been greatly improved, so it's much more like having a real conversation with another person.
The model is real-time responsiveness, so that means that you don't have this awkward 2 to 3 second lag before you wait for the model to give a response.
But it's not just the words.
The model picks up on emotion, right? When I was breathing super hard there, it could tell, and it knew, hey, you might want to calm down a little bit. You're kind of running a little bit too fast. So, you know, it really has that capability across the board to perceive your emotion.
And another thing the new version can do is use visuals. In one part of the demonstration, a man held his smartphone over a handwritten algebra equation so that ChatGPT could see it.
Okay, so ChatGPT, this is what I ended up with. How does this look?
Spot on. Now you've isolated the term with X on one side, and it looks like 3X equal 3. What do you think we should do next to solve for X?
I so could have used that in algebra class. While artificial intelligence bots have been getting smarter in the past couple of years, this is a giant step forward in being able to have realistic conversations that AI voice chatbots have not had until now. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for being with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. You can also download our app from Apple and Google. In Washington, I'm Scott Walter.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has been leveraging the power of partnership to build a Western Hemisphere that can lead the world and overcome any challenge, said National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan at the Washington Conference on the Americas. The United States has pursued partnerships as a key strategy to advance prosperity for all, said Mr. Sullivan.
For more than two decades, we have built free trade agreements as part of the foundation of our economic policy through the hemisphere, and they've made important progress even as those free trade agreements have taken on important new components, including relative to labor and the environment.
But they were not a complete answer, said Mr. Sullivan, because the prevailing assumption that the gains achieved through trade agreements would be shared by all of society didn't entirely bear out. Those gains didn't reach a lot of working people across many of our countries, he noted. We need an economic agenda that builds on the work that has been done in the past, but also acknowledges the new challenges ahead, said Mr. Sullivan.
It means building resilient supply chains, as we learned during the COVID-19 pandemic. It means mobilizing public and private investment for a just energy transition. It means promoting and protecting workers' rights. It means really getting serious about tackling corruption, which is a cancer that eats away at economic progress and prosperity in too many countries.
The U.S. is also teaming up with countries across the region in order to address transnational threats. Chief among them is synthetic opioids, including fentanyl. The United States remains committed to defending democracy across the Americas, including in nations like Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, said Mr. Sullivan.
We've worked nonstop with partners across the region and from around the world to hold the Maduro regime accountable for the commitments it made under the Barbados Agreement, including to hold competitive and inclusive elections this year.
Mr. Sullivan stressed the need to work together to ensure that democracy delivers for our people, that it protects them, that it makes their lives better in meaningful, concrete ways. If we work together, there is no reason why the Americas should not be the most prosperous, democratic, secure region in the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the